Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State, Division of Historical Resources, and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org. This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, online at myfloridahistory.org. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on the program, Jewel Collins, the first African-American woman elected to the Cocoa City Council, has died. In the mid-20th century, community leaders would gather at the Collins home to discuss how to improve the lives of Black people in Cocoa.
We had a big dining room table, and I have that in the museum. And we would sit around the table, and that was Dr. Jolie Smith, Richard Blake, Sylvester Donald, and that we would have our meetings at my house at the table.
Her legacy lives on in the museum that bears her name, the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture.
It's critically important that the story of African American life be told, and that it be told by the people who experienced it. So these museums, often very small, underfunded, are just treasure troves of materials.
All that ahead on Florida Frontiers. The city of Cocoa is in Brevard County in east central Florida. Cocoa is on the mainland, separated from Cocoa Beach by Merritt Island. African American families started settling in Cocoa after the Civil War, forming a community west of downtown on the other side of the railroad tracks. Laura Solomon Brown is a former newspaper librarian and lifelong resident of Cocoa.
Well, I grew up on Magnolia Street, which is now Stone Street. At 708 Magnolia, my dad owned the property from 708 to 815. He had a business. He was a barber, ran a barber shop right next door. My mom ran a grocery store. And all the businesses down in that area were Black owned. There was Mr. Pullen, he had a dry cleaner. Mr. J.C. Ager had a grocery store. There was Davis Restaurant. Mr. Howard Shank had a little garage there. And Miss Mary George had a beauty shop. And there were just so many people down there that owned everything.
Many fond memories. Born and reared right here in Cocoa, Florida, I'm happy to say.
Michael C. Blake is mayor of Cocoa.
I recall dirt roads. I recall kerosene heaters, citrus. I recall Mrs. Ager's grocery store at that time in the community of Diamond Square. We would quite frequently visit her grocery store. Also, there was a mulberry tree in the back. A lot of fond memories with the senior citizens of Cocoa. Pentecostal churches, holy churches, Methodist churches, Missionary Baptist churches, also St. Mary's Catholic Church as well, Catholic school. So I have fond memories of Cocoa.
The Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture in Cocoa celebrates the local community and notable people who lived here, including educator and civil rights activist Harry T. Moore, writer, folklorist, and anthropologist Zora Neale Hurston, and original highwayman artist R.L. Lewis. The building was constructed in 1922 and 23 as a Rosenwald School to serve African-American students. Connie Lester is an associate professor of history at the University of Central Florida, director of the Riches Digital Archiving Project, and editor of the Florida Historical Quarterly.
Rosenwald schools have that name because, in part, they were funded by Julius Rosenwald, who was the president of Sears Roebuck. Julius Rosenwald was also on the board of trustees for the Tuskegee Institute. And he recognized Southern states did not fund that schooling very well. So he created a foundation, the Rosenwald Foundation. And the purpose of that foundation was to help build schools in black communities. And the way it worked was this. The foundation would put up a certain amount of money, and the community itself then was required to put up the remaining amount of money.
In addition to providing seed money to build schools in African American communities, Rosenwald provided plans for the construction of the schools. These designs ranged from one- or two-room schoolhouses to larger facilities.
Across the South, there were some 5,000 schools that were built. In Florida, there were over 70 that were built. And they're dotted all across the state. Most of them are gone now. That's true across the South. As desegregation of schools occurred, then those buildings were abandoned. Sometimes they were caught up in the civil rights movement itself, and some of them were burned down as a result of arson. Those that were abandoned just kind of fell apart. Some of them become community centers as well. So a variety of things happened to them, but there were more than 70.
Today, just a few of the Rosenwald schools that were built in Florida still exist. One of them now houses the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture. The dedication speech at the opening of the school was given by Mary McLeod Bethune, founder of Bethune-Cookman University and advisor to President Franklin D. Roosevelt. The Coco School, also known as Coco Junior High School, was originally a four-teacher school. By 1929, it was expanded to accommodate seven teachers. The structure became Monroe High School in 1947. Many people who would become community leaders in the second half of the 20th century attended Monroe High School.
I went to school there through ninth grade. My class was the second class to graduate from Monroe High School. Leon Collins was my classmate. His sister Shirley Rhines was my classmate. Jolie Smith, Dick Blake.
My grandfather, Virgil Blake, granddad of Virgil Blake, we call him a Pap. Some would call him Deacon Blake, was one of the first right here in the city of Cocoa to be on the first African American to be on the PNZ board, Planning and Zoning Board. My father, Richard Blake, our first African American elected official in the city of Rockledge. I think he was the second or third in Brevard County, period. So that level of expectation was great. And quite naturally, you want to be independent and have your own challenges and be your own individual person. But I'm thankful that I had a family that loves me. I'm thankful for a family that took care of me. And one of the things I learned as an early childhood years that by being country folks in the city of Cocoa, prominent country folks, was that we have to open up our circle to include everyone. Because everyone would come to your house, you know, even for just a bowl of sugar, a cup of sugar, milk, flour. So we were community oriented. And you know that you couldn't do any wrong because they would tell. So that's one of the good things about, you know, it kept you on the straight and narrow.
Monroe High School closed in 1968 when nearby Cocoa High School was desegregated. The 1954 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Brown versus the Board of Education had called for the integration of public schools.
Monroe High School played a pivotal part in the community because it was the focal point. All your church events took place there. All your educational events took place there. town meetings would take place there. When the basketball team or the football team would go out of town, people would stand on the corner and wait to see what the results were from the various sports activities. They were known for agriculturally as well. They were also known for their arts and crafts.
This is Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Visit us anytime online at myfloridahistory.org. On this program, we're looking at the African-American community in Cocoa, Florida, and the city's Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African-American History and Culture. Community leader Jewel Collins, who the museum is named after, has died.
It seems I hear Harry Moore from the earth, his voice still cries. No bomb can kill the dreams I hold, for freedom never dies. Freedom never dies, I say, freedom never dies. No bomb can kill the dreams I hold, for freedom never dies. It happened in Florida, the land of flowers. It was on a Christmas night. Men came stealing through the orange grove. Men of hate carried dynamite.
Perhaps the most notable person associated with the historic Brevard County building that now houses the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture is educator and civil rights activist Harry T. Moore. He began teaching at this Rosenwald school in 1925 before becoming principal of the African American school in Titusville. Educator, activist, and journalist Rosa L. Jones lived in Cocoa from 1907 to 2008 and remembered working with Harry T. Moore.
He came to Cocoa to become principal of our middle school. Mr. Moore was dissatisfied with the difference in salaries between the white and black school teachers. So he called together this particular time three or four people to meet with him at this particular place to discuss launching a drive to be made against the state for regulation of this salary. And those present at this meeting that Mr. Moore called, who was still principal of this school, was his cousin John Gilbert, and another great friend of him that followed him through it all, Elmer Silas, my daughter-in-law's uncle, Mr. Williams, Rosa Jones, and the host and hostess, Mr. and Mrs. Michael Monroe. They were there because it was in their home that this meeting was held.
Ben Green is author of the book Before His Time, The Untold Story of Harry T. Moore, America's First Civil Rights Martyr.
I think he started his activism with what he knew best, which was education. And so through his involvement with the Florida State Teachers Association, which was the black teacher organization, he filed the first lawsuit in the Deep South to equalize black and white teacher salaries. Black teachers, black principals made basically half what their white counterparts did. That was also the first time that he interacted with Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall had filed the first lawsuit, had won the first lawsuit in the country to equalize black and white teacher salaries. But that was in Maryland, border state, and Thurgood was working for the NAACP already. So Harry Moore wrote him a letter and said, we want to move on this in Florida. And it was the first, I think, of many interactions that they had.
Being a teacher, particularly when he became principal of a school, he saw the inequities, not only in the school facilities, but also in the amount of money that the state was spending on black children versus white children. And of course, he was very much aware of the pay inequity for black and white teachers.
Bill Gary is president of the Brevard County branch of the NAACP.
So he had talked about this to a good friend of his, John Gilbert, who was the principal of the Cocoa Colored School, and convinced John to be the plaintiff in a lawsuit that he filed to equalize teacher pay.
Evangeline Moore, who died in 2015, was the daughter of Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore.
During that time, when we were all together, it was very, very sad, so far as I'm concerned, because I can remember going to churches where Daddy would ask if he could speak and tell the people about the NAACP and perhaps start a chapter in that particular church. And the ministers always waited until the benediction was said. And people, some of them had gotten up and left before they would let him say anything. That still hurts, even now. So far, Daddy did teach Black history because he taught all of us in fifth and sixth grade. But it was not a part of the curriculum. He did it on his own, and I'm sure that's another reason why they fired him. Yes, we do need, right now, we need some strong Black leaders. That's the main thing. And, of course, yes, teachers should realize what my dad went through to get their salaries equalized. And, yes, they should be members of the NAACP, but I suppose they're still afraid as they were back in the 40s and 50s. That's the only answer that I can give you.
Ben Green.
There were three big things that he worked on. One was teacher salaries. The other would be voter registration. And then the third would be lynchings. But really, this is another juncture where he and Thurgood Marshall came together. In 1941, Thurgood Marshall won the Supreme Court decision, Smith v. Allwright, that outlawed the white primary, which was the only election that mattered in the Deep South. Harry Moore immediately organized the Progressive Voters League in Florida and started registering Black Floridians in the Democratic Party.
Harry Moore, of course, being an educated person, an educated man, knew that power lay in the ballot box. And if you cannot elect a person like yourself, then you try to use your voting power to vote for those persons who at least express some interest in your concerns. And so he and his good friend Ed Davis formed the Progressive Voters League, I believe in 1944, and they went about the state. That was a separate, of course, now at this time, Harry Moore had already established the Brevard County branch of the NAACP and had established other branches throughout the state. But the NAACP is nonpartisan. So they established this Progressive Voters League as a separate organization that strictly was devoted to registering Black voters and getting them to vote. And they went about doing that over the next 7 years or so. The records say that they registered some 116,000 people.
Harry T. Moore was killed when a bomb exploded under his home in North Brevard County on Christmas night, 1951. His wife, Harriet, died 9 days later from injuries sustained in the blast. Many people believe it was Moore's voter registration activities that was the motive for the murders. Others believe it was his involvement with the infamous Groveland rape trial. Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore were killed 12 years before Medgar Evers, 14 years before Malcolm X, and 17 years before Martin Luther King Jr., making them the first martyrs of the contemporary civil rights movement. Their legacy has often been overlooked.
In a way, I think they're like multiple tragedies. One is they were killed, and the murders have never been solved. And then, in some ways, it's almost equally tragic they were forgotten. I feel like the most poignant epitaph really is he was killed 3 years too early. If he had been killed in 1954 after the Brown decision, he would be Medgar Evers. He was Medgar Evers. He just did it before anybody was paying attention. He would have been in every history book. Everybody would have known his name. But it was 1951. There was no civil rights movement. There were no TV cameras filming the dogs attacking children in Birmingham. The murders were not solved. It was really just forgotten about.
It's part of the mission of the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture to remember Harry T. and Harriet V. Moore and their efforts to bring equality to all people. Writer, folklorist, and anthropologist Zora Neale Hurston, best known for her 1937 novel Their Eyes Were Watching God, spent some of her most productive years in Brevard County. In 1956, she lived less than half a mile from the building that is now home to the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum. Today, Hurston's work is taught in high schools and colleges around the world.
As a trained observer, as a person who had studied under Dr. Franz Boas, a father of American anthropology, as a person who had access to her native village and that community, she recognized the beauty, the intrinsic beauty of the people of her heritage group.
N.Y. Nethiri is executive director of the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community.
And not only recognized that beauty, but was able to present it in a way that others can recognize it. Perhaps not so much during her lifetime with her contemporaries in Harlem, some of whom thought that she was entirely too folksy, but the point is that work that is truly of merit lives. And today, Zora Neale Hurston's work, her literature, her genius is acknowledged and celebrated throughout the literary world.
Artist R.L. Lewis was born and raised in Cocoa and attended Monroe High School in the late 1950s, a few years after the school moved from what is now the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum to a newer facility just down the street. His art teacher, Mrs. Leisure, introduced him to the work of Harold Newton. Lewis, along with Newton, would become one of the original highwayman artists.
The way I look at it is this way. If you got to survive, you'll survive. I don't care what it is. Tough times don't last. Tough people do. So that's one way to look at that. But this art that you see is the highwayman art. It was not art for the sake of art, just to put beautiful stuff up. It was art for the sake of, in some cases, survival.
Leon Collins was the first African-American man elected to the Cocoa City Council in 1973. He also served as vice mayor. Jewel Collins was the first African-American woman elected to the Cocoa City Council in 1999, and she also served as deputy mayor. Community leaders would gather at the Collins home to discuss how to make life better for African-Americans in Cocoa.
We had a big dining room table, and I have that in the museum. And we would sit around the table, and that was Dr. Jolie Smith, Richard Blake, Sylvester Donald, and that we would have it, our meetings at my house at the table. So we have taken that table, and we have put that table into the museum now. So that table is there.
Laura Solomon Brown.
Leon was a class clown. Always nice. He grew up between Magnolia Street and 520 in a house right behind Mrs. Hall that ran the Seven Threes. There was a big family of them. His brothers, Harold and Carol, delivered milk to my father's store. So I've known them all their lives. Their older sister moved to Daytona. And Leon never got in real trouble. He was just a clown, but he played football. I didn't know Jewel until he started to date her. I think she moved from Georgia. So that's when I became acquainted with Jewel.
Jewel Collins hopes that the museum will inspire young people in the community to do their best and achieve great things.
My daddy had given this to us. He said, if you see your brother down, reach down and pull him up, help him up. And I always kept that in my mind, that if I can help somebody along the way, then I figured that, you know, whatever happened to me, I wanted to see somebody else achieve, not just me, but someone else.
In recent decades, small community museums like the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African American History and Culture have begun to emerge in traditionally Black neighborhoods.
They're critically important. It is, and historians have only in the last few decades come to grips with this.
Connie Lester.
The ways in which African American history was not preserved in larger white museums, or if it was, I've had museum curators say to me, yes, we had some of this material, but until recently it sat in the back, you know, in the archives, and nobody really saw it. It's critically important that the story of African American life be told, and that it be told by the people who experienced it. So these museums, often very small, underfunded, are just treasure troves of materials that the community feels comfortable now in making available to the larger world.
Coco Mayor Michael C. Blake.
Everyone should be able to identify to protect and preserve their history, because we all matter. Even though we come from different tribes, we belong to one race. That's the human race. We're all God's children. 100 years from now, they can go back and retrieve the information that's there in that historical building that they're named after Mr. Leon Collins and Mrs. Jewel Collins. They played a very pivotal point in the overall success of COCO. So that is the reason why I acknowledge them. They're just like a spoke in the wheel, that each part has its own intricate design to make the overall success of the wheel. So I salute all citizens on both sides of the track, but especially where I grew up at in the African-American community.
African-American community leader Jewel Collins has died. Her legacy lives on at the Leon and Jewel Collins Museum of African-American History and Culture in COCO. Their website is collinsmuseumcoco.org. So shine bright tonight, you and I. We're beautiful like diamonds in the sky. I do I, so alive. We're beautiful like diamonds in the sky. Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond. Oh, yeah. Shine bright like a diamond. 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 You've been listening to Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society. Please join us right here again next week. Until then, find us anytime at myfloridahistory.org and on Facebook. Production assistance for Florida Frontiers comes from Connie Lester and Sebastian Garcia. The program is edited by Giselle Concepcion. Have a great week. I'm Ben Brotmarkle. Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, is made possible in part by the Department of State Division of Historical Resources and the State of Florida. It's also made possible by the Jesse Ball DuPont Fund and by the historic Rossiter House Museum and Gardens in O'Galley, celebrating pioneer history, the natural environment, and women's history. Available for weddings and events at rossiterhousemuseum.org.